The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today. She's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever. She's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but Chef Ed weighing in saying Chewy caused the alarm to go off with his hot take on borscht.
Cannot wait.
The alarm did go off during the commercial break, so I think Gabe is right. They are now crying wolf.
Chewy's take on borscht.
So exciting.
Is
I already know what
medium
I'm getting.
At best. It's not even a hot take.
Right.
He doesn't even fully endorse it.
He did say they don't like it. No, they don't.
They don't love it.
They like it. Yeah. So it was not
pickle soup do anything for you?
I like pickle pizza.
Ugh, I got sick from that one time. It's disgusting.
I love pickle pizza.
It was a cheeseburger pizza with pickles on it.
That's not the same
Turned
thing.
Turned my stomach.
Yeah.
What's a pickle pizza?
It's a pizza with pickles, not a cheeseburger pizza that happens to have pickles on it.
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
I'll bring you some. You'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy it.
So borscht, pickled soup, order of galumpkies, and then pierogies fried. You guys would like it.
We were reading through the description of your restaurant. It does sound lovely. Not the one that you could frequent very often, but like, yeah, it'd be good in the rotation.
Yeah. Right?
Throw the what is it called? The pierogi farm? The pierogi house?
The pierogi bar.
Bar. Oh, that's close.
Yeah.
Farmhouse bar. I was way off. I do want to get back to a lot of the reaction that rolled in about this 80-team Super League. Alan weighing in just simply saying no. Doesn't explain why. He just says no. But a lot of people are talking about the money element of it. And how does the money change? Has that been hashed out by the article guys? I didn't get a chance to read fully through it. But do they talk about how the television money in particular would be distributed between the 80 teams? Obviously, if you're one of the 10 teams that gets relegated, do you then not receive as big a share? Is it shared equally amongst the quote-unquote conferences in the Super League? What was their suggestion on how the television revenue is shared around per program, Gabe?
The revenue distribution would not be evenly split among all competitors, making top brands like Alabama and Notre Dame, they would receive more bigger piece of the financial pie.
And based on what?
I mean, based on, I guess, your name brand recognition, you know? So Alabama gets more money than Northwestern. You know,
yeah,
Notre Dame ends up getting more than Indiana.
What if Alabama, under Kalen DeBoer, their new coach, finishes 31st? Do they still get that top of the pie cut?
No, probably, because
whoever finishes top gets the, and then pare it down to number 80.
Well, but that's
the
just
only fair way to do it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're not going to do it a fair way, Chew, because I mean, unless you split it evenly amongst everybody. Because everybody knows, like, the Packers and Cowboys are more valuable to television networks because that's what we're talking about, like Alabama being more valuable, Notre Dame being more valuable to television networks than the Houston Texans in the NFL, right? The Packers are more valuable than the Texans. They just are. More people are going to tune in, no matter how good, how bad, how indifferent the Packers are, how good, bad, indifferent the Cowboys are. Those are name brands. Those are recognizable. Bama, even if Northwestern somehow finishes ahead of Bama, more people are going to be tuning in to watch the Crimson Tide. And that's why they get more money.
So the other thing that I saw, and this was a mock that was thrown out about a month or so ago, but it included tiers. So their mock only had 60 teams or something similar to that. Maybe it was 64. I'm not exactly sure. But the point was they had tier one teams and tier two teams, and then everybody else was considered a tier three team. And the way that they shook out the schedule was your first game of the season, if you were a tier one or a tier two team, you would play a tier three team. It wouldn't count towards your record, though. That would be so that you could get guys in there and figure out positional battles and things like that. The second week of the season, you would play somebody who was comparable to you on the tier two. So if you were a tier one, you'd play a tier two team that was comparable to you either in a conference ranking, right? You finished first, second, third, fourth last year, and so you'd play them. And then everything else, they had crossing the conferences. So they did mock schedules, right? So let's just rattle off one of their things. One of the mock schedules for Texas, for instance, which was a tier one team, was McNeese State, which is clearly a tier three team. The following week, they would play UTSA, which is a tier two team, same seed, same region. And then it went Boise State, USC, Iowa State, SMU, Oklahoma, Baylor, Wisconsin, Iowa State, TCU, and Mizzou. which is not all that different, save a couple of teams, from them actually playing the Big 12 schedule.
But then you're running into a recruiting advantage, a huge recruiting advantage, which is not fair.
What's the recruiting advantage?
The recruiting advantage is, hey, Alabama's going to get the biggest chunk of the pie. Five-star athletes are all going to go to Alabama, while Tier 2 and Tier 3, they're going to be like, why would I go to a school where I'm going to make lesser money? It's just an unfair advantage when it comes to recruiting.
But to be honest with you, the Tier 1 teams always get the best recruits, or most often get the best recruits. It's an anomaly when a five-star player goes to a, for this, you know, argument, Tier 2 team, isn't it?
But they do, though. But they do. They still do.
Right, but it's so
few and far
between.
You guys don't see that as an unfair advantage?
Well, I think in order to do this, Chewy, you got to have you're going to have to cap it. It's going to be a salary cap.
Yeah.
So,
which would, again, have to be collectively bargained, wouldn't
it? Yeah. Oh, 100%. So, I mean, whatever extra money Bama's getting, if they want to put that into their facilities, and maybe that becomes, you know, the advantage that they get, or if they put it into their university the way they have done for years, who knows? But
and then you run into the transfer portal problems, because if there's a kid playing at Boise State that wasn't recruited as a three-star athlete, now all of a sudden he is a stud, then Alabama goes in there, hey, we'll pay you more money. Here you go. It's just unfair.
Well, they would have to hash
out. I don't think there's a perfect way. There's not a perfect way to do it, but it's got to be a fair way to do it.
I guess my question to you, Chew, is this, go ahead.
What's going on now?
Yeah, I was
going
to say, my question to you is, does this proposal feel more fair or closer to fair than what we currently have going on?
I think it can be more fair if it's handled correctly. The thing we're trying to accomplish, I believe, is these kids should be getting some sort of benefits and a bigger piece of the pie. Because that 7-point-whatever billion we were talking about early in the show, that's just the playoffs.
Yep.
That's not even the regular season. So, I don't know, double that number? We're talking about $15 billion?
I have a hard time imagining this actually coming to fruition, because you have to, what whoever is behind this, right, this Super League idea, and they've gotten a couple of meetings according to this article, you have to now go to the commissioners of the SEC and Big Ten and convince them that their jobs, okay, give up your job, because the SEC and Big Ten aren't going to exist under this plan. And the SEC and Big Ten, like, Greg Sankey's going to protect his job at all costs. He's making a good chunk of money. He's making a really good chunk of money for all the member institutions of the SEC, which is why places like Oklahoma and Texas want to jump in there. It's the reason why UCLA, USC, Oregon, Washington want to jump into the Big Ten, because their commissioner's been able to negotiate a pretty good TV deal. I just don't know how this is actually going to come to fruition without buy-in from the two biggest conferences that get the biggest media deals for the regular season.
Well, it's
gonna,
very,
TV deals.
It's going to have to be player driven, clearly.
No, it's very easy. Greg Sankey, are you getting more money to move on to the next thing? If you are, he's going to do it. And so is everyone else. And if this has enough money, if it's getting big enough contracts, if those are all proposed and a part of it, then everyone is in favor.
But it's not. But it's not going to, until you get buy-in from the SEC and Big Ten. Like, there's going to have to be a leap of faith at some point. Because ESPN, who has the SEC locked up, isn't going to come to the negotiation table for some sort of 80-team Super League unless the SEC and unless the Big Ten buy in, which is, again, why the SEC and teams like Alabama are going to want more money. Because they're already drawing and pushing most of the revenue in this sport anyway. They don't want to give that up so they can give more money to SMU. Right?
Is there any concern with the relegation part of it, guys? Because we had one person weigh in, James in Connecticut, weigh in saying he wanted to hear more about the relegation with this Super League. I think the end of year excitement and betting around relegation would be amazing. How many teams are relegated every year? 10 go down and 10 come up out of 80. What are the qualifications that keep you in or get you moved down?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that water down the integrity of these leagues? If you're the SEC, I wonder if there's a part of you going, well, no, because if Missouri, which again has had a bit of a resurgence, actually, but let's go with Rutgers again. I was trying to pick somebody other than Rutgers because it just feels like they're our whipping boy now. But at some point, if Rutgers is there and Maryland is there and Northwestern is there in the Big Ten, you know, you've got all these teams. Doesn't that start to water down the sanctity of your league? At some point, it's going to be very obvious that the SEC is top-heavy, is my point.
The relegation...
Well, hold on. They share the money now, though.
The relegation aspect of this, to me, is like just stop pretending. I don't know why everybody wants to add relegation. I mean, the NBA's talked about it and all these places. Especially when you have 70 protected teams out of the 80, and then you're cycling it. It's not like Alabama's ever going to be a threat to get relegated. If everybody, I think, is a threat, that makes it more interesting. But if the bottom 10 teams, like, you're just going to keep cycling through the same 20 to 30 programs in the bottom part of that that are going to go down and back up, it's not. I don't think it's going to be that interesting. Because all, like, I don't see a team being able to overcome relegation, come from the bottom to the top tier, somehow then beat the other top 70 teams. Like, the relegation piece to this just makes zero sense to me. And it's just throwing it in there to throw it in there. I think they're better off if they don't have it.
Everyone just wants, Europe's model has worked really well with soccer.
Yep.
And that's, everyone's just trying to recreate it. Is it going to matter as much? Does it need more foundation? That's all part of it. It just doesn't, like, when you're considering relegation and how that affects things, like, the conferences aren't going to care because they don't exist.
Correct.
There is no conference to be like, well, I don't want our teams to be part of that because they are no longer there. So once they're in and they're chartered in the top 70, it is what it is. The thing's over. The teams are in if they're in and they stay in or they're out. It's that simple. It seems to me, and they mention it in the article here and they kind of breeze over it a little bit, but with all the antitrust issues, all the government involved, the politics involved in all of this, it is not hard to foresee a future where the NCAA and the SEC and the Big Ten can't physically exist anymore because they're in so much trouble. Now, they have huge lobbying things working in their favor, but if a judge rules against you and you owe billions and billions of dollars, you are no longer an entity that holds any power.
Yeah, and that's, to me, the only way this thing happens.
Like, yeah, it seems to be the most likely.
Yeah, because I just don't think the SEC, and so far the SEC and Big Ten just haven't played ball with this idea.
Right.
Because, again, they've got the power right now. They have they have so much power, they're negotiating guaranteed playoff berths as part of the new 14-team system. Like, that's how much power the Big Ten and SEC have, and they're in cahoots with each other, so they're going to continue to push that narrative.
One thing, your favorite sport, golf, it wasn't a factor. Liv wasn't a factor until it largely became.
Well, so that, honestly, like, that's what when I see this, that's what I think. If there's an entity like the Saudi PIF, their investment fund that wants to come along and give away money, that's how this gets disrupted. Otherwise, just going to be dragging their feet.
And it's like done overnight.
But that's why golf's terrible. Golf's terrible now. It's horrible.
Correct.
It's four majors. That's it. That's all I watch. Well, I haven't even watched Liv one time in the 2 years that's been in existence.
Yeah.
No one else is either.
But that's what I'm saying. I'm saying, in order to get to an idea this radical, that might be what it takes, is somebody with a bleep ton of money coming in and going, hey, this is the way we're going to do things now, and they start paying these universities to start peeling them off, and then you have a splintered college football before it comes back together in something that might look like this.
And we talked about a salary cap obviously having to be instituted because you'd want there to be at least parity with how much people are spending. But what's the penalty for those that go above the salary cap? It's probably worth it for some of the bigger programs to go above the salary cap if they're just getting hit with a fine, right? If you can find money to go over the salary cap, you can find money to go to pay the fine for going over the salary cap, unless the penalty is that you are not allowed to participate.
If you have a salary cap, you have to have harsh penalties with it. Otherwise, it's why have a salary cap?
Why not, like, the luxury tax in basketball?
Correct. Matter? I think you have to have a firm, like the NFL. Again, I think you have to, in order for this to work, you have to copy as many NFL ideas when it comes to collective bargaining and salary cap. In order for this to work, you have to do something as close to the NFL as possible.
But the very first step would have to be unionized. The very first step was those athletes would have to be unionized. They would have to have an association, a players association, that would go to the boardroom and get all of these legalities figured out. So that, to me, feels like step one. Are we close to that? No, we're not right now. But obviously, this is being thrown out there as a potential quote-unquote solution to the mess that college athletics, college football in particular, are right now.
The last line in the piece over at The Athletic is one of the organizers of this idea saying, speed is our friend. We don't have a lot of time to waste. And I just don't know how something like this comes together so quickly with so many complications behind it. Maybe we see this in 10 to 15 years.
I don't think it'll be that long, Gabe.
So the earliest, the absolute earliest it could happen is 2030, based on TV contracts. That's 6 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that applies to, who knows, like, if somehow, some magic way, the college players as they stand today manage to put together a union, now the NCAA will work hard to stop that. This can all change overnight, where it becomes antitrust issues, and then there's no football as the other option.
Well, but that's what everybody's got to get ready for.
Yeah.
Like, will it get to that extreme? Like, will the college players unionize and then go on strike? Like, that also seems pretty out there as an idea that I have a hard time imagining high school kids who have worked 18 years to get to a college only to sit out. And again, would it be better for the game overall? Probably, but I don't think asking 18, 19, 20-year-old kids to sit out because it might be better for the future of the sport, they're going to be looking at this thing short-sighted. That's the other tough thing.
I don't want to oversimplify, but it does feel like the complicated nature of this puts most people on the nay as opposed to yay. Let's take a vote just of our panel. Are you in on the Super League or not? Yay or nay? Joshy?
I'm in.
Gabe?
I like it as an idea.
What does that mean? Is that a yay? Yeah,
I like the idea. I just don't think it's...
Then that's
there
a nay.
Are so many... I like the idea. Do I wish it would happen? Yes. Do I think it's going to happen? No.
I love the idea, but what I think is going to happen, if it does get close to that, the NCAA is just going to throw money at these kids and say, all right, how about $10,000 a month NIL money, which is still a drop in the bucket based upon the $15 billion they're going
to
get.
To me, it feels too radical, so I'm in the nay camp. 800-990-3776. Go ahead and weigh in on our Jen, Gabe, and Chewy Twitter poll about the 80-team Super League that has been proposed for college football. We'll take a break here on the show. Be right back after this.
My freezer, you know, is always packed with Palermo's Pizza because you never know when you're going to get home. It's been a long day. Man, I don't have the energy to make dinner, but I still want something that tastes good. That's where Palermo's comes in. Pull it out of the freezer, throw it in the oven. You're going to have something that tastes great. Because with Palermo's, they've been doing this for 60 years. They have so many brands under their umbrella. They're going to have a slice that fits your appetite. Whether you're looking for something with a nice, thin, crispy crust, check out their Primo Thin. Maybe you're looking for something more artisan. Check out Urban Pie, Connie, Surfer Boy Pizza, Screamin' Sicilian, all these different brands with Palermo's. So keep an eye out for Palermo's Pizza in the grocer's frozen fruit aisle. Palermo's, it's Wisconsin's hometown pizza.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Just jump on it.
That's what he did.
Jump on it. Slow down. On 94.5 ESPN.
For your next night out, make Aria, the acclaimed restaurant inside St. Kate the Arts Hotel, your dinner destination. Aria is nestled on the second floor of St. Kate. It's an artful dining experience that captivates with its culinary creativity, delighting in its offering of artisanal American cuisine. The restaurant transcends tradition, leaning into the realm of playful and inventive flavors. Come and experience the magic of Aria, where every bite is a work of culinary artistry. Learn more and make reservations at aria@stkate.com. Aria at stkate.com. Time for a little top 8 at 8 action. Gabe, what do we got this week?
Top 8 at 8.
Name something that follows the word pork.
You pie.
Huh? One category.
Name something people take with them to the beach.
Turkey.
The top 8 answers.
The first thing you buy in a supermarket.
Turkey.
The top 8 at 8.
A food often stuffed.
Turkey.
The top 8 at 8 on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Name Popeye's favorite food.
Chicken.
Oh my God.
Show me chicken.
The top 8 at 8 on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
With the story about Stephon Diggs getting traded yesterday and the Bills absorbing a big cap hit, I want to know who are the top 8 Packer cap hits for 2024. The top 8 Packer cap hits for 2024. Again, Jen and Chu will guess back and forth. Once they each get one incorrect, we'll open it up to you, the fan. 800-990-3776. Whoever gets the last one on the list wins the ESPN Milwaukee prize pack.
I imagine these are people on the roster, but also not on the roster.
The top cap hits for 2024.
Maybe he would help me out there, Chu. I guess I'm imagining that David Bakhtiari is on this list. What do you think, Chu?
Sure.
We're working together. It's like in the vein of Power Rankings.
I said sure.
David Bakhtiari.
It's number three on the list.
Nice.
He has a 19.065 cap hit.
Let's go with... Ew!
Jair.
Number two on the list, Jair Alexander, 23.98 is his cap hit for 2024.
And things are getting dark.
Just sign.
How about Kenny Clark? Is Kenny Clark?
Kenny Clark is the top cap hit for the Green Bay Packers in 2024 with a $27.49 million hit.
Rashawn.
He's number eight on the list.
Just 11.146
is his cap hit for next year.
Okay, so what do we have? What do we have so far?
Kenny Clark, Jair Alexander, David Bakhtiari, Rashawn Gary. One,
it's
two,
just
three,
that
and
they
eight.
Have so many young guys that I don't think have big cap hits yet. Hold on. Wait a minute. Hold up. Wait a minute. How about Preston Smith?
Preston Smith, number five on the list, 14.107 million.
Left guard.
Need a name.
No, you don't. Jen, I helped you.
Are you talking about Elgton Jenkins?
Yes, that's him.
Number four on the list, 14.429.
All right, so we have to be getting close to the all.
You have six and seven. That's all you have left.
Again, I don't think it's a bunch of these young guys. Would Xavier McKinney have a top cap hit?
That'd be a good guess.
Reset the list for me, please.
We need an answer.
I want you to reset the list.
You know who you've guessed.
I just don't know.
What's the list listening? Going to do for you?
Here? It's going to help.
It's going to give her more time. Yes. She's looking to stall.
Xavier McKinney
is number nine on the list.
You guys led me astray.
Since his is a 1 year deal, though, Josh Jacobs
is number 10 on the list.
Oh man, we should have been able to run the table.
You should have, yes.
800-990-3776. 800-990-3776 to play top eight at eight. We are looking for the top eight cap hits for the Green Bay Packers this season.
In 2024.
John in Milwaukee, you're up first on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Can you complete our top 8 at 8 list?
Could you reset the list for me?
John, exactly.
John will get the reset. Because he's been waiting on hold. Maybe he missed one. You were a part of the entire conversation.
Doesn't mean I remember all of that.
Again, you got a pen over there.
I know. I should have been writing it.
Kenny Clark is number one. Jair Alexander, number two. David Bakhtiari, number three. Elgton Jenkins, number four. Preston Smith is five. We don't have six or seven. Rashawn Gary is number eight. And the two new free agents were incorrectly guessed, both just outside the top eight, and Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs.
How about Devondre Campbell?
So Devondre Campbell, his cap hit is going to be 3-point-some-odd million because he's a post-June 1 designation, so his dead cap for the upcoming year is going to be outside the top eight.
Is that wrong? Yeah. Okay.
That is incorrect.
800-990-3776. Let's go out to Mike in Franklin. Mike, you're on with Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Can you complete our top eight at eight list?
I think I just heard the last caller reset it, so I think I'm okay. Jordan Love.
Jordan Love is number six on the list.
Really?
$12.757 million. Dollars. You guys should be embarrassed. There's one more. Number seven.
Keyshawn Nixon.
Keyshawn Nixon is number 11 on the list, just behind Josh Jacobs.
800-990-3776. Mike in Waukesha, you're up next on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Can you complete our top 8 at 8 list?
How about Aaron Jones?
Aaron Jones is number seven on the list. $12.348 million cap hit for the Green Bay Packers in 2024.
That's a good list.
Yeah, so they only have eight guys whose cap hits are above $10 million this year.
And what are you doing?
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed in us. I think we should have been able to get Jordan Love and Aaron Jones.
Is his cap number going to go up, though, or are they going to keep it the same?
Love?
Yeah.
Because
they have room. They have room, Gabe.
So they have room, and I mean, it's going to, I think, have to go up a little bit. Even if they try to keep, you know, this year and then tack on the years after it with a signing bonus, that gets, you know, prorated across the deal. So I think it's going to have to go up at least a little bit, but maybe not by much.
I think we are just 1 month away from when Jordan Love can sign that.
Yeah.
Extension contract? What are we calling it? Contract?
Extension, yeah.
Extension, yeah.
I think, yeah, we're 1 month away from that. So do you think it happens the first day they can do it?
I have been of the thought of it's going to get done relatively quickly early in May. I think they're working on it now. I don't think that there's too many things that they need to hammer out. You just pay the guy.
I just said Jason's Dario.
Man, you are just really struggling with names today.
I didn't sleep well last night. Chewy.
Yeah, that's me.
She really had to concentrate. Oh,
yeah.
Man, that is... You just need to take a nap here in the break. Yeah. Just like go in the chair, just kind of curl up,
find a
blanket for you.
Chewy doesn't think it's going to happen is what I was trying to say. Not as quickly as you think it's going to happen.
Yeah, we kind of had a fake bet with Gabe. But Jason agreed on both fronts with me that it'll be under Gabe's 52 and it'll be closer to training camp.
But Shefty thinks it's going to get done quickly.
Nope.
And Shefty thinks it's going to be more towards Gabe's number.
Yeah.
52?
Nope.
Yeah, correct.
Jason's more dialed in. Shefty's got too many things on his plate. He's got to worry about the whole league. Jason has to worry about the Green Bay Packers. So Jason carries a little more weight here.
And what are you going to worry about when we tell Adam Schefter that you said that?
Yeah, when we play this for him next Wednesday.
I'll deny it.
Oh, attaboy. Shaggy.
AI,
there you go. That's not my voice.
Deep faked it.
That's not my voice.
I'm a real boy.
All right, guys. Potawatomi Sportsbook is going through some state-of-the-art upgrades. For the time being, you can find the temporary sportsbook outside of the marketplace on the casino's first level. The all-new sportsbook opens the first week of May. Are you ready to spark something new? Light up your senses at Potawatomi Casino Hotel. Explore more at paysbig.com. Paysbig.com. Remember, the first week of May, May 3rd, that all-new sportsbook opens up at Potawatomi Casino Hotel.
You're listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
But remember he said his birthday?
Yeah.
Maybe we get a little freaky?
Yeah. everyone's like, oh, look at our horny little boy. We're so good for him. Like, everybody's so supportive of Giannis, they just kind of look past it.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Bunchel's Meat Market, 90th and Burleigh, right here in Milwaukee. Weather, I think, is going to be turning. I'm hoping that this last week was kind of the worst of it with the snow, the rain, the mixture of it all.
I saw sun.
Yeah, I did see sun at the end of yesterday. So I think those warmer temps are on the way. You know what that means? You need to stop by Bunzel's to grab some meat to throw on the grill. This week you can grab USDA top sirloin tri-tips at $13.99 a pound. A favorite of mine, Bunzel's own fresh honey mustard brats. $6.89 a pound. Those are my favorite brats. Maybe you want some burgers. Third-pound bacon cheddar burgers at $5.79 a pound. The meaty, bone-in, country-style pork ribs, just $3.99 a pound. Also, when you stop in, go to the deli counter and pick up some lunch at Bunzel's. Treat yourself while you're there at 90th and Burleigh. Visit Bunzel's.com for special store hours and more.
The Stephon Diggs trade to the Houston Texans is what prompted Gabe's top 8-8 list today. And we don't want to spend a ton of time on the trade itself, but more what it means for the league as a whole. Because there was a lot of people yesterday in Packer land who were talking about Devontae Adams. Why? Well, of course, Packers traded Devontae Adams a few seasons ago and got a haul for him. And yet it doesn't appear, Gabe, as though wide receivers, even number one wide receivers, are going for that same price now, especially when you consider what the Texans traded for him. Now, some of that could be that Stephon Diggs was a bit of a malcontent in Buffalo. And I don't want to sit there
and part of
and,
it.
And that's the thing. I don't want to sit there and ignore that part of it because it was clear that they had nothing more to say to each other, right? If you want to use they as a euphemism for the entire team, or if you want to use it as Josh Allen, it appeared as that had run its course. That relationship had run its course. But I was still surprised that this seems to be the direction the league is going with guys who could be considered number one wide receivers.
Yeah, it seems like the league just doesn't want to pay as much for these top guys anymore, which I'm with you. It's a little surprising. I mean, the Packers did it because Devontae wanted out, and they were still able to get a good haul from him. I think Stephon Diggs wanted out. When you look at what the Chiefs did, I think they decided they wanted Travis Kelce more than they wanted Tyreek Hill. And they thought that they could win Super Bowls still with Travis Kelce being that top pass-catching option, and they've turned out to be right about that, winning a couple of championships in the last 2 years. But I still think you need to have that elite pass catcher on your roster. I don't think you just want a bunch of guys out there. And as much as the Packers roster is filled with young, exciting talent, I'm hoping one of those guys emerges to be one of the top 10, top 5 wide receivers in the league, because I think that's what makes offenses really dangerous, is when you have a top guy that you can rely upon, and even though everybody in the building knows you want to get him the ball, you can still get him the football.
You think the Bills just realize that their window's closing and they're kind of dumping big caps a little early because Buffalo without Diggs, I don't even know if they're a Super Bowl contender, because they did get a lot. They were in a little bit of cap trouble. They got rid of some players.
Chewy, yes, I think this was more about Stephon Diggs not wanting to be there.
You know, yeah. What?
I mean, the breadcrumbs for this were started dropping last year when he wasn't showing up to some things, and they had to like beg him to show up at training camp and different. Again, the breadcrumbs, I think, especially if you maybe were in, you know, just diving in headfirst into Buffalo Bills talk throughout the course of the regular season, I think the breadcrumbs were there for Stephon Diggs not being a Buffalo Bill.
It feels like to me the league is telling us, once you get outside the top like 3 or 4 wide receivers, 4 through 25 are all pretty similar.
Yeah.
And they provide the same thing generally. And your quarterback is a huge portion of how much those guys end up mattering.
Mm-hmm. Which then makes me wonder if Brian Gutekunst wasn't ahead of the curve by the way they've chosen to handle the wide receiver position in Green Bay. I read an article that said that the Packers' entire wide receiver core is making less than $10 million total. Now, that won't always be that way, obviously, but right now, it seems to be working. They have found young talent that can be productive, and whether you think that they need to go out and get a veteran to shore up that room or not, it does feel like maybe if you're the Buffalo Bills, that might be a blueprint you could try to follow as well, try to build through the draft your wide receiver core.
I think that's a little revisionist history, because they wanted Devontae. Devontae's the one who wanted out. And
easy.
What?
They really wanted Devontae, they would have signed him to an extension a year.
Oh, well, a year prior, Goody, yes.
Goody screwed that up.
Oh, 100%.
Goody screwed that up.
100%. And the other thing is, I don't think it's that easy to draft wide receivers. You take a look at all the wide receivers Goody drafted before this group, El Stinko. I mean, some of those...
He's number one, though, Gabe?
The majority of the guys that he drafted, I think two are still in the league, but I saw Amari Rodgers playing in the UFL. Saw Jay Sternberger playing in the UFL.
Got a TD, too.
Amari did?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Chew, you asked a question that I think Gabe has answered from a number one wide receiver standpoint, but I also think that like a wide receiver one can emerge. I don't know if you need to have a de facto number one guy. I know that, look, we're going to always look at the Kansas City Chiefs as sort of the blueprint because they have been the most successful team for the last few years running. And Travis Kelce has been Patrick Mahomes' favorite target. But even as the season went on, it seemed like he was sort of, whether it was because he was being double teamed or whether it was he was not the number one option. I mean, they were using other guys in their offense to get the job done.
You look at what they did in the postseason, though. They locked in on 3 guys they trusted, and everything revolved off of Kelce. After Kelce, then it was Rashee Rice. Then it was Isaiah Pacheco. You want to have those guys that you absolutely can trust. I mean, you take a look at the past Super Bowl champions. I mean, they all had a defined number one target. You'd have to go back to 2017 with the Eagles, who I don't even believe had a 1,000-yard receiver. But the Patriots, when they won, they had Gronk. Chiefs had Tyreek and Travis Kelce. Buccaneers had really good wide receivers with Godwin and Evans, and then Gronk obviously coming in there as well. The Rams, Cooper Kupp And they had OBJ as part of that receiving corps as well before he got hurt.
That's the distinction I'm trying to make, Gabe. Are those wide receiver one guys or guys who became wide receiver ones because they got the most touch? They got the most carry. Jeez, Luis. They got the most catches.
I mean, Cooper Kupp, he's one of the best receivers in the NFL. A Hall of Famer. Kelsey's a Hall of Famer. Like, these are, you know, really good players at their positions that help them win a Super Bowl. You look at, again, you go back to the last 5-6 Super Bowl champions. They have that, this is our guy. And especially when you get to the playoffs, when push comes to shove, we need a big catch. Chewy, I know you like to talk about this on third down, 3rd and 5. Who are you going to? Having that guy is what can take you to that next level.
But similarly, on the other side of that coin, the Packers had that as well with Rodgers and Davante Adams, and they never went to a Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? So, I understand that there is a list there that you are presenting to us as evidence that wide receiver one is important to winning a Super Bowl. If the Packers go out and win it this year and don't have a quote-unquote wide receiver one, again, someone will emerge as that go-to target. But will it be the quintessential wide receiver one, top of the league, getting, you know, all of the catches? That's what I'm trying to say. Is there a flip? Is there an evolution? We know the league changes. Is this a way that you can also get the job done?
I don't think it is. I think the Packers are very fortunate with what they have. And I don't think any other team in the NFL has 4 or 5 guys you can trust. Because, the draft is such a crapshoot. I mean, I don't think Goody thought that all 4 of these guys I guess you could make the argument that they haven't all developed since they continuously trying to figure out the hamstring issues of Christian Watson or sending him to a hamstring specialist. I don't think you were planning on all 4 of these guys, and maybe they still aren't planning on all 4 of them continuing to develop at an incredible rate, and that just, hey, we've got these 4 guys, and 1 or 2 of them is going to emerge and take a step above the other 2.
Yeah, and you guys are talking about 1 pluses, you know? 1 plus is Tyreek, Devontae. Look, Free wasn't a 1 plus when we won it all. Would you agree? Free, I think, was a one-time Pro Bowl player. He was a great player, but he wasn't a 1 plus. I think teams are staying away from these 1 pluses because, A, they cost a lot of money, and, B, they kind of turn into headaches a little bit.
They demand a lot of attention in just the locker room.
I mean, when the Packers won in 2010, they didn't have a 1 plus. Jordy was never thought of a top 5 receiver in the league.
Greg Jennings was their number 1 at that point. Jordy had the big Super Bowl. Jordy was just emerging, but like Greg Jennings
never a 1 plus though, Gabe.
No, but he was a Pro Bowler. Like, he was clearly their number 1 guy. Like, again, you think of the big third down play. Jennings had 2 touchdowns, and the 1 play that everybody thinks about in that Super Bowl, 3rd and 10, you need a 1st down. Aaron Rodgers fit it into a tight window that Greg Jennings came down with.
I think the point is, though, if you get a Greg Jennings out of this crop of wide receivers, you're more than good enough at that point. If those wide receivers you have there all kind of stay at the level they're at and one of those guys becomes a Greg Jennings, I think you're more than happy with that as a wide receiver core.
Yeah. But again, somebody has to step up, and then you have to continuously, because the reason why the Packers then, from like 09 to 14, they kept backfilling the position, right? They added Jordy, they added Randall Cobb, they added Davante Adams. So you have to continuously backfill, and it's not just about the 4 guys you have now, it's about, okay, who are you going to draft, not even in 24, but in 25 or in 26, because with these 4 guys, they're not all 4 going to be here in 3 years. Like, they're going to have to make decisions. Yeah. They're not going to assign them all to big-time contracts. They're going to have to backfill with other, you know, hits in the draft the way that they did, from 09 to 14.
Yeah. The other nice thing here is you really don't have to worry about injury. You know, if one of those guys go down for the season or a bunch of games, you're fine. You lose Tyreek Hill, you lose Stephon, you're screwed. You're not going to the Super Bowl. You lose Kelsey, you're not going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of insulated here, which is another luxury that they have.
I guess I'm just thinking back to that. I think it was 2011 team and that Sports Illustrated cover that had all those wide receivers on it, right? I think JerMichael was on it, James Jones was on it, Randall Cobb was on it, Greg Jennings was on it, Donald Driver was on it, Jordy Nelson was on it. I guess of that group, you're saying Greg Jennings was the one?
He was coming off of a 12-touchdown, 1,200-yard season.
But I still think that Rodgers was spreading the ball around. Like, that was the great thing about that offense.
Yeah.
And so it feels to me like they're trying to duplicate that, not cover per se, but that roster, that room, so that Jordan Love has options. One day it might be Romeo Doubs. One day it might be Christian mm-hmm. Watson, God willing, cross your fingers. One day it might be a Bo Melton. One, you know what I'm saying? Like, it feels to me like that's the blueprint they are trying to copy.
Yeah, but again, somebody's going to have to emerge. Somebody has to be that number one guy. Again, Greg Jennings was damn good. We don't like to think about it because of the way things ended. But if one of these guys has a 12, almost 1,300 year with 12 touchdowns, like, that's very obvious wide receiver one numbers. That puts you in the top 10 in the league. And,
but
and
with
I think
all these players, I don't think anyone will get there, Gabe. I don't.
Then I've got, I mean, what about one of the tight ends then? Can one of the tight ends become one of the top 10, top 5 tight ends in the league?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because I think that you need
but
to
I don't,
have
Gabe, again,
somebody
I don't
like
think
that.
They will because they got to keep both guys happy. Because they're both pretty damn good. That's what they did with me and Keith. I mean, I was a little unhappy and more touchdowns.
I mean, the fact that you're still talking about it to this day leads me to believe you're more than just a little unhappy.
How many touchdowns do you think Chewy had in 1996, Jen?
Three? Lower? What? Lower?
Keep going. No, Gabe, you can't say lower than one because I had a two-point conversion.
In the Super Bowl, he did. He scored points in the Super Bowl. So while he did not score a touchdown, he scored a two-point conversion.
Jen, you know how many Keith had?
If I took one, it's still the under, right?
Jen, do you know how many Keith had?
Two-point conversions? Zero.
No, touchdown.
Oh, I thought we were doing the things that made you look good. How many?
Yeah, 10.
10. 10 touchdowns. Well, that's more
I think
than
I'm owed an apology from the Packers.
All I want is apology and for that guy to be fired.
To be fired, yes.
You've probably heard about employee stock ownership plans before, but what separates Fifth Third Bank from others when it comes to these plans? A succession plan that benefits business owners and employees from full and partial sales, second stage transactions, repurchase obligation financing, and seller note refinancing. ESOPs can offer tax advantages, increased liquidity, employee incentives, and overall diversification of net worth, all to help your company plan for the future. Fifth Third Bank, National Association, custom solutions built around your goals. Member FDIC.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Hey, everyone who I let try borscht likes it. They don't love it. But it's a liver.
What an endorsement.
This is your pitch.
But hold on.
Hey, yeah, like, guys, good luck. I don't even have to talk anymore.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Here we go. We got to go. Go ahead, Gabe.
Two more public Elite Eight matchups in the public.
Goodness.
Speakerphone versus cutting in line. Slow driver versus no turn signal.
All right, we got to get out.
Check him out on Twitter.
Tausch is back there giving us ugly eyes, mean mugging us, because we got to get to his show. Will be in touch next on ESPN Milwaukee.